Janice Cheesh for being here with us today. You are listening to Juno Afternoon, and I'm Rhonda McBride. For almost 30 years, the Sharing Our Knowledge Conference has brought together like-minded souls, the common thread between them, interest in preserving the indigenous languages and cultures of Southeast Alaska with ties to Canada. Tribes and clans are the pillars of this symposium who have worked in collaboration with academics from linguists, cultural anthropologists to artists and scientists to not just amass a treasure trove of knowledge, but share it. And this conference gets underway this week in Wrangell, and our guests today have been key to organizing this gathering, Jocelyn Estes, Peter Metcalf, and Jim LaBelle. And later in our program, we're going to be joined by Mita DeWitt, who is a traditional healer. But we have the three of you here with us right now, and perhaps what we could do, Jocelyn, Peter, and Jim, is each of you kind of briefly give us your background and tell us why this conference is important to you.
Hi, thank you, Rhonda. This is Jocelyn Estes, and my background is I majored in history in college, and I worked as a historian. Then I worked in coastal management and other things, and I became a historian. But history and culture has always been a love of mine. And this conference, the Sharing Our Knowledge Conference, combines both. And so when I was asked to volunteer and serve on the organizing committee, I was happy to do that.
So, Jim, tell us a little bit about some of the things that you've done in your life, because I tell you, when I look back, you've been a Native Corporation leader, you've taught Alaska Native Studies, but tell us a little bit about yourself and what brings you to this conference.
Well, a lot like Jocelyn, I somewhere in the Ethernet, I got recruited. Maybe it was Jocelyn who snared me into this thing. No, I'm just kidding. I am Jim LaBelle, of course, and I am a retired professor at UAA, and I'm also a Vietnam era veteran. I've worked in industry for ARCO in the past. I did some government work with the Tony Knowles administration. And but also I'm a boarding school survivor, as we like, many of us like to refer to ourselves these days. I never said that in the past, just that I'm a product of 10 years of boarding school, Wrangell and Mount Edgecombe.
And Jim, could you also tell us about some of your work nationally in this arena?
I am the first vice president for the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition. We call it NABS for short. My brother Willie Hensley likes to refer to it as NABD, which is a little different.
One thing you two have in common is a sense of humor as brothers. Oh, my goodness. And that's another story about you and Willie being half-brothers going to different boarding schools. But we'll get into this conference and how it will address the Native boarding school experience. But I want to go to Peter Metcalf, who is one of the organizers of this conference. So, Peter, what brought you to getting involved with this?
Well, it was primarily my contact with my friendship with Andy Hope III. Both of our fathers happened to be basketball announcers on their off hours, and that's how I kind of knew about Andy. But it wasn't until the mid-70s and our shared interest in music. We were both fans of Jim Pepper, a Native American jazz man, and Andy arranged for him to come to Sitka, and I did the same here in Juneau. And then one thing led to another, and in the early 80s, I was involved in producing video as well as historical publications. That's when I also intersected with Jocelyn, who was archiving the Lefty Weisbrot papers, which was part of the foundation of the Central Council in the earliest days. And I was writing a history of the Central Council. And so all of this kind of coalesced. I worked for Native corporations for most of my career, did a lot of publications, some video work. And then in 1993, Andy and I had already been working on several publications before that, but then Andy began organizing what we were calling then the Klan Conference. And the first one took place in Haines, Klukwan, and it was a huge success. And as Andy said more than once in more than one conference, there's a hunger for this. People showed up, participated. We had many, many fine presentations, and I was sort of executive producing the video. Back then it was Betacam.
Heavy stuff back then to lug around.
And then some years elapsed. Andy did a couple conferences in 1996 and 1997 in Saxman and Sitka that weren't well-funded. But then around came 2007, and it's kind of the modern era of the conference, and we began calling it the Sharing Our Knowledge Conference in 2007. And Andy, with the help of Sergey Kahn, a scholar from Dartmouth in New Hampshire, and Steve Hendrickson, who's a curator at the Alaska State Museum here in Juneau, they all got together and masterminded this grant from the National Science Foundation. Finally, we had good money to really produce a first-class conference, and I was just looking at it the other day, and I'm just kind of dazzled by what we did back then. We had over 100 and something like 105 presenters. There was 91 presentation sessions, and we got it all on video, and we embedded their PowerPoints that they were showing at that time. This was 2007, and put it all on 37 DVDs that many libraries around the state have it. But one of my chores now is to download those DVDs so we can upload them to the internet, and we're going to do that soon. So that's kind of in a nutshell my involvement with the Sharing Our Knowledge Conference.
Now, Jocelyn is of Thlinkit heritage. Jim LaBelle is of Inupiat heritage, and you are a non-native.
Right. As I found out through 23andMe, I'm just resolutely Northern European.
So what brings, why do you have so much passion for this, being a non-native for this conference?
Well, a couple things. The positive side is my father had deep friendships with the Native community, and it was kind of unusual at the time. He was, as I said, you know, he was many things. He was an editor, one of the first people on television here in Juneau, radio commentator. But he was passionate about sports, and I think most of his broadcasting, he did get paid for most of it, but it was off-hour type of thing. And I just remember my earliest memory of this is I was up in the broadcast booth in the Juneau High School auditorium. He had to climb this metal ladder to get up there, and I was probably 8 or 9, and my dad knew everything about all the Native players on the floor, but not just that. He knew who their grandparents were who were watching, and this endeared him to Alaska Natives. And you know, the one their earliest memory of a Native player was Billy Bean. You know, he's pretty well known throughout Southeast, but the name just stuck with me, Billy Bean, you know, as a little boy. But in any event, as I grew older, there wasn't anywhere I could go in Southeast that people did not know my father. And Alaska Natives, almost to a person when I'd introduce them myself, would recognize that I was Vern Metcalf's son. And they would always say, oh, he was my best friend. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. So that was a not natural entree to me. And then some of the passion is the more I became familiar and befriended and began working professionally with Alaska Natives, I realized how we had learned nothing in grade school or high school about local Alaska Natives, and it really angered me. And then when I first started producing publications like for Central Council, I wrote the first history of the Central Council. And it was, you know, it was so rewarding as a writer to do the first, you know, publication of that sort, because I realized it was the first, and that there's very few things that are more stimulating to a writer or a historian than to do the first, you know, publication.
I know, as a person who has covered a lot of Alaska Native stories as a journalist, they're my favorite because they're fascinating. And I want to turn the conversation over to Jocelyn and Jim here. You know, if we rewind the clock or rewind the tape 30 years, there wasn't a lot of collaboration between tribes, clans, and researchers. How are things today?
Well, I think that the gap still exists in that researchers don't always have the opportunity to get their work covered by the mainstream media. And so they go and do research on certain topics. And the other thing is they do their research in libraries and archives, as well as with living subjects. And so clans and tribal leaders and tribal citizens may get interviewed and be the subject of a study, but then never hear the results. And I think it's not for lack of trying, it just doesn't happen. And so the Sharing Our Knowledge conference is one way to bridge that gap.
Well, Jim, as a Alaska Native Studies professor, what do you think about this progression over time of things, information kind of exclusively being in the hands of academicians and scientists and not in the hands of the people?
Well, it's been growing in a sense that the researching by academicians, not necessarily indigenous, often never acknowledged or included their sources. And so they went on to publish all kinds of interesting things, but the people they were getting the information from was never acknowledged. And I think a lot of people started seeing that and seeing through that. It doesn't just happen in the academic world, but it happens even with people traveling out to communities and villages and doing these works, and then leaving without giving any proper acknowledgement.
So, Jocelyn, now that this conference has been going for almost 30 years, do you see the conference as a bridge between all the groups of people? Is it getting better, sharing the knowledge?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And not only is it a bridge among non-Native academicians and tribal citizens, it's a bridge between Native researchers, people who are studying themselves. So, for instance, if you look at the keynote speakers for this year's conference, the first one who's going to speak is Deborah O'Gara, who is Tlingit, and she's actually my second cousin. She's related to me through my great-grandmother, Tilly Paul Tamry. And Deborah O'Gara used to be a magistrate, and she was a tribal court judge, and she retired from that, and now she's working on a dissertation on decolonizing Alaska Native justice, and she's going to be giving a talk on Thursday morning. The conference actually starts Wednesday evening with a warming of the hands or a welcoming ceremony at Chief Shake's house, which is a replica of a tribal house in Wrangell. So that's Wednesday night. And then Thursday, Deborah speaks. We have 40 speakers, and putting it all together so that people can, it was hard. I don't know how they did it in the past, but it was really hard finding, you know, putting everybody into the right time slots. And I think we've got an incredibly fascinating, interesting several days worth of sessions for people to look to listen to. And if you can't travel to Wrangell, you can enjoy the sessions online by going to sharingourknowledge.org. And there you'll find a thing, a little menu item that says live stream. And it'll take you to another menu on YouTube where you can pick whatever session you want to attend. So our first keynote is Deborah O'Gara. Our second one is Miranda Bilardi Lewis, who's a professor at University of Washington and a curator. And she's going to be, the name of her session is In War and Peace, Our Arts as Historical Documents. And she's going to discuss the artworks of several Northern Native artists and how their art confronts painful histories in order to provide pathways towards a healthier future for Native peoples. So those are, and then Jim is our third keynote speaker. So Jim, if you want to talk about what you're going to, if you want to describe what you're going to talk about.
Well, I think by now, I think most Alaskans are becoming more and more familiar with just the trauma that many children experience. And I'll certainly add my own to the plenary, but what I really want to do is kind of dive off of the video called Our Spirits Don't Speak English and give it a more of an Alaskan texture, I guess. But in Wrangell and Wrangell Institute in particular, and as I have often said over to different groups, we're not in I'm not in this vein of blaming and shaming, but I certainly need to share with those participants in Wrangell just how children reacted and responded to being in a, and kind of in an alien environment away from their friends and family and villages. And, but I also want to keep in that same vein of peace and healing, where I'm going to talk a little more about maybe how maybe the community of Wrangell, if it so chooses, could themselves offer an apology to, although there's none of us going to be there, and but they definitely were involved. They benefited from having Wrangell Institute nearby. Their careers were established. They made a good livelihood. But a lot of times, I think, many of them did not understand the trauma that was inflicted on, especially young children. I'm not saying older kids were that much, but the younger ones. And just put it out there and see if there's going to be any takers.
Well, what I want to do right now is just take a short break. And when we come back, would like to bring Mita DeWitt into the conversation. She's a traditional healer and will be involved with your presentation and a healing ceremony after this day-long seminar you're going to give. So let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. To Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Before we return to our conversation, I want to have some disclosure here that KTOO does have the contract to record this gathering this week in Wrangell, and we'll be live streaming it, and videos will also be available later on KTOO 360 TV. And perhaps, Peter, since you've been kind of facilitating all of this, trying to make it happen, maybe you could talk about this process of not just having to go to Wrangell, which would be wonderful if we could all do it, but it suddenly becomes available for anyone who wants to watch.
That's right. Rhonda, we kind of got down this track when we were thinking about doing it in 2021 and having to do something in the, during the, you know, when COVID was really hitting. And so we're going to trying to plan a hybrid event. And, well, it turns out that now that everybody's pretty conversant with Zoom presentations, we were able to host about 11 Zoom presentations from literally around the world. We have a Russian presenter, one from England, several from the East Coast, a couple from provinces in Canada. And those will be happening during concurrent presentations. So the people at home, remember this, go to it as I speak, sharingourknowledge.org. On the front page, you'll see a click through to the program, a fabulous program and fabulously complicated. It's been, and thank God for K2, I'll say that much, because it's going to be, everything's going to be video covered, and everybody at home can go to this website, click through to the live stream, and pick from about 41 presentations. And if it's in progress, you can use the slider to go back to the beginning. If it's been recorded, that'd be obvious, and you check that out, or wait for the next one to come up. It's all going to be in real time, and it's going to be live streamed. So,
well, Mika Wilson is a technical whiz here at KTOO, and it's just so exciting that, you know, here we go from when Andrew Hope started this gathering, Andrew Hope III, and it was so difficult to put it on, and yet people would try to be there, and they did have a good crowd, but we're talking going from 400 people or so when this started to thousands.
Yes, this is going to be really
exciting.
I'm really excited about that too. And why Wrangell? You know, it was at one time historically, it's one of the centers of the political development of the indigenous people of Alaska. And Joclin is directly related to a couple of the people who were most definitely responsible for Alaska Natives winning civil rights. And they did it pretty much on their own, thanks to people like William and Lewis Paul. Lewis is Joclin's great-grandfather, and Tilly Paul Tamery, her great-grandmother. She was a hero in the civil rights movement in Alaska. And so we have an opportunity to revisit some of these people and some of the incidents that happened in Wrangell in the early 20th century.
And, of course, you know, Jim will be talking about his experience at the Wrangell Institute, which was a boarding school that had a mixed history of good things happening and bad things. But, Joclin, maybe could you tell us about how you feel personally being from Wrangell, how it is to be a part of this conference and having the conference in Wrangell?
Well, first, I'd like to mention that Mita DeWitt is actually related to the Pauls also. She and I are the great-granddaughters of Tilly Paul Tamery and Charlie Jones, Chief Shakes of Wrangell. And she's technically my cousin's daughter, Miles DeWitt, but I call her my niece because in Tlingit tradition, cousins were considered siblings. So Mita's my niece, and I'm happy to be in the show together with her. I didn't grow up in Wrangell. My family moved there when I was about to start high school, and I spent my high school years in Wrangell. And it's a beautiful, beautiful little town. It had Wrangell was one of the first communities that was overrun by non-natives. Gold was discovered in the Kazyar district in 1867, and that's upriver from Wrangell. And the gold rush, the 1848 gold rush in California, was petering out, and a lot of prospectors who'd been looking for gold in California came up through Wrangell to the Kazyar district, and the town was overrun. So it lost a lot of its cultural traditions in that kind of onslaught and in other episodes of history. So I think Wrangell is really, you know, it was a stronghold of Tlingit culture, just as the Chilkat and Chilkoot Indians were up in Skagway and Haines area. And Sitka and Wrangell, those were the three strongholds, really, of Tlingit culture. So I think it's totally appropriate and fitting that we are going there to share some of the history of Wrangell, really, with people there.
I'd like to introduce Mita DeWitt. She just joined us. She had an earlier commitment. So, Mita, you're known for wearing lots of hats, just like our other guests, but I've known you as a traditional healer. So can you tell us about your role at this conference, a little bit about yourself, and why it's important to be at this conference?
And thank you, Jacqueline, for recognizing that I'm also a part of that amazing family lineage. And my father's Miles DeWitt, and he's from Wrangell, and his Tlingit name was Kata Nek Ish. So I have so much to say, like it all wants to come out right at the same time. I'm actually really excited to go down. I haven't been to Sharing Torah Knowledge Conference for a while, and we had COVID. And so hearing that it was in Wrangell, I made a promise to myself that I'd make a way to go and to get to the conference. And I was accepted to have a session there, and I was going to have two sessions, but I'll have one session that's going to be combined conversation on traditional healing and ethno-herbalism. And it's exciting in several different layers, because it's a sharing our knowledge conference. So the goal would be that I would be sharing back to the people some of the stories, some of the lessons learned. And I am grateful because my family, you know, recognized me and as a healer early on before anybody else did. And I've really had a privilege in this era to be able to do that kind of work, because it hasn't always been acceptable. You know, when colonization happened, many communities, their medicine people were hunted down. Some were murdered. Some were sent to institutions, whether they're judicial penitentiaries or whether they're mental asylums. They were sent out in various ways. And so our medicine people, you know, they had to go underground, or we didn't have acting, you know, open medicine people for a few generations. And we have, of course, elders who come before us who held that light or held that space. But, you know, my oldest uncle, my grandma's oldest son, when he heard what I was doing a long time ago, he says, "Oh, good, somebody's taking up the family profession again." And really, to do this work, I had to get into academia. And, you know, Jim LaBelle, he was one of my first Alaska Native Studies, you know, teachers, and really kind of blew my mind and learning some of this history from around the state and the experiences that happened. And then, you know, my grandma and family downloading information about civil rights and land claims and medicine, and, you know, all of that rich history is why we come together, because our story that we share with each other collectively creates our culture. And culture can be an intentional or unintentional. And so by coming together and sharing our knowledge, we're creating intentional culture and intentional intergenerational transference of knowledge and building in that way.
You know, let's talk a little bit about the theme for this conference, A Time for Peace. And Jim, as well as Mita and Jacqueline, maybe this is a good time to reflect on that. I love the translations for this in the three different languages, Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian. The Tlingit translation of A Time for Peace is peace, in parentheses, deer time. So I guess peace was thought of as how peaceful deer are. And also in Haida, it's in this time of peace. And then in Simpson, it's a time of making peace. But it all adds up to one thing. And maybe, Jocelyn, you could talk about why this theme was chosen.
Well, for a couple of reasons. One is that at one time, Sitka and Wrangell were at war. And the war went on for decades in the 1800s and early 1900s. And I'm forgetting what year the peace was finally negotiated, but we wanted to commemorate that time. And we also wanted to recognize the historical trauma that Alaska Natives have experienced. And so that includes everything from the bombardment of Wrangell in the 1800s by the U.S. military, and also the suffering that people experienced as a result of the terrible, terrible epidemics that ravaged Southeast Alaska and the rest of Alaska and all of Native America, really. And so we wanted this to be about finding peace both on a personal level and we want to see healing in our communities, and we want to see peace in the world. And so that's where the theme came from.
Jim, do you feel like this is a very appropriate theme? Boy, we sure live in a time where people are fighting everywhere at every level.
I find this very, very appropriate and timely, not only for Wrangell, but for the nation. I could almost see Wrangell as a microcosm of what's going on nationally with respect to boarding schools. And I'm just privileged and happy to be a part of both. And I do see it is kind of long overdue. It comes in different phrases. Other people call it truth and reconciliation. Some of it may call it something else, but I think we got the idea correctly that it is truth and healing. In order to have healing, you've got to say what the truth was, and then go through a process of forgiveness. And that's where I've been for quite a while now. Is I have gotten over all of those things that I had animus toward Wrangell Institute. And I have a better understanding of how a lot of things played out, not only for the students, but for the community of Wrangell. And I want to share that connection.
Mina, would you like to add to this?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that translation and the deer time of the Guacan. And really what that goes to is a process of peacekeeping. So the Tlingit Haida and Tsimshian, you know, there's a very in-depth set of protocols. And so in that peacekeeping, there was a Guacan or a deer hostage. It was a person who had a pure heart. So that peace hostage is a ceremonial hostage, and basically you would allow them to have that person for a month or two and host them, and this is an intention of keeping peace. And so you'd send over the Guacan to the other tribe or clan or group that you're making peace with, and depending on how they treated that person, the Guacan person, they would depict on how the rest of the peacekeeping conversations went. And so it was an intentional trust and reciprocation that happened. And so it's not just that deer are peaceful, it's that the purity of heart was the person that was sent over to the clan in a showing of trust.
Well, that is a beautiful concept, much, much deeper than it might seem. Well, before we go on with our conversation, and Jocelyn's going to tell us a little bit more about some of the seminars that are coming up, I want to reintroduce our guest today, Jocelyn Estes of Tlingit Heritage, and she's one of the organizers, along with Jim LaBelle of Inupiat Heritage. And you just heard from Mita DeWitt. She's also of Tlingit heritage. And we also have Peter Metcalf with us. He has a long history of working with the Alaska Native community through publishing books and recording video. So, Jocelyn, let's go back to you and tell us about – it's like this gigantic buffet that is being prepared for everyone in this Sharing Our Knowledge conference.
So I am just thrilled to be able to share this list, and I'll just rattle off several of the sessions, and that'll give listeners a sense of the breadth of topics that are going to get covered at this Sharing Our Knowledge conference. So one of the first ones on Friday will be a talk about Florence Shotridge, who was a Tlingit woman and a museum educator. And this is a student from, let's see, I don't have it written down, but she's, oh, that's right, from Oxford in the United Kingdom. She's telling the life story of Florence Shotridge. And then Heather Burgee is talking about language revitalization efforts. Linda Wynn and Will Geiger will be talking about the significance of the Downhauer papers. Dr. Emily Moore is going to be talking about the Tlingit village of Taquan at Port Chester on Annette Island. And Hans Schroft will be talking about the Taku River Tlingit First Nation Land Guardian Program. The Smithsonian is going to be there, and they have thousands of objects that they've collected from Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people during the 1800s and 1900s. And they have dozens of objects that came from Wrangell. So they're going to be giving a talk about that. And the last one I'll mention is Dayush Ethan Pettigrew is giving a talk on rebuilding culture and education in Indigenous communities. I should also say that the Tlingit and Haida Central Council Behavioral Health Department is going to be there, and they're going to be giving talks on breathing exercises and ways to center yourself if you're ever triggered by trauma. And we also have the healing ceremony with Bob Sam and Jim LaBelle with Mita DeWitt assisting. And we're also going to have a Tlingit immersion, language immersion yoga class. And so we'll be, for those who are up for it, we'll be practicing a little bit of yoga. So, and Peter is the whiz, the computer genius who put together the program. And Peter, I can't thank you enough because it just looks gorgeous and it's all really clear. It's clearly laid out. And this was like a super, super complex puzzle. And I did kind of a rough draft, and Peter has just done the lion's share of work to really make it come together.
Well, thank you, Jocelyn. But it's been really fun working with you, as we have for over many years, including we were in Tinicky recently with Larry Golden, Jocelyn's husband, and having a wonderful time there fishing and just hanging out in the community.
So, Peter, you've worked on this conference for many years and seen the progression. What do you see evolving?
Well, one of the changes over time has been steady progression in the academic achievement of Alaska Natives. You know, we have quite a few presenters who are doctorates or doctoral students who are of Indigenous background, whereas in the beginning there was more of that on the non-Native side. But from the beginning, we've had pretty much a balance between non-Native and Native presenters that's edged towards a predominance of Alaska Native presenters. And so, you know, one thing I wanted to mention, you know, as a topic of our earlier conversation, was when Andy Hope, who started this, you know, observed there's a hunger for this, you know, you kind of have to unpack that a bit. And one of the things there was a hunger for was the interaction of academics who were becoming increasingly enlightened in that, you know, the post-60s. They really wanted to be interacting with the people they were studying, and that wasn't always the case. They're from academia, and the people who they were studying had been somewhat abused by academics in the past by not being given proper credit. So this conference is unique. You know, it does put everybody on an equal playing field, and there's mutual respect and friendships that are formed. So that's been immensely valuable to academics, that they become, you know, friends with Alaska Natives, not just, you know, standing off at a distance and studying them.
You know, I would say, and our other guests can speak to this as well, is I think the whole world is hungry for this knowledge. Because, Mita, take, for example, your knowledge of traditional plants and how to use them to heal, or even how to help people work through grief. I mean, that's valuable knowledge.
Yeah, it is. It is valuable knowledge. And one of the things that we've seen is many of our traditional ways, whether it's Tlingit or other Indigenous people in the past, has actually been co-opted. There are lots of mainstream events and activities that are based off Indigenous thought or traditional Indigenous knowledge. You know, people a lot of times don't realize that Plains language was the basis of sign language, or, you know, that the kayak was developed, you know, by our Alaska Native, you know, people and then adopted by outdoors groups. Or even, you know, the concepts of permaculture are rooted in Indigenous, you know, land management and food cultivation skills. So really what we're doing is, you know, establishing that we have an incredible body of knowledge, and it is on par and in some ways more advanced than Western. And if we can bring them together to work together, I feel like that is going to be an evolution of our, you know, world cultures when we start working together versus, you know, taking each other apart. The difference is that we are sharing it intentionally. And what that does is it helps to give wisdom, insight, and it frames the knowledge in a way that makes it usable and reasonable and on our own terms. So when that knowledge is used before and it's just taken, then that creates a pain, or, you know, abusive. And by us sharing and working together, then it is empowering and strengthening.
And I had a chance recently to hear Ernestine Hayes speak to a group of people. She's a well-known Alaska Native writer. One of her books, Blonde Indian, has won awards, and she's been recognized. But one thing she said is that for Alaska Natives, education was weaponized to be used against them in a culture war. Though I'm not sure I'm quoting her exactly, but that was the sentiment. Jim, you know, in your own personal boarding school experience and your work in Alaska Natives, do you think that this is something important for the conference to address?
That actually is a very, very precise description of education that Ernestine describes. But I'd also like to say that it began from the very beginning of the creation of our country. It started way back in the 1600s. And it just, it changed and morphed and became, but the end run was always to assimilate Indigenous people and acculturate them. And certainly I'm going to use myself as an example. When I first went to Wrangell, I believed I was truly bilingual. I could speak English and I could speak Inupiaq. But after Wrangell, I could only speak English. But compounded was the idea that while I received a general education, there was never anything taught about who we were as Native people. And that continued on at Mount Edgecombe. And so when I was spit out on the other end at 18 years old, I really was a lost person. I really did not know who in the hell I was. And it took me a long time of trying to reclaim my identity. And I know this happened to, if it happened to me, it happened to thousands of other people like myself over the generations to more or less different degrees. And I've been on a lifelong journey to try to learn some of those things that I should have learned growing up.
So one of the things, not to borrow from Ernestine again, but one of the things she said is what we see among the homeless, people struggling with addiction, family violence, is that they are actually the walking wounded, casualties of a cultural war. Do you agree with that?
I certainly do. There's another term that I like or a couple of things I want to introduce. One is we still have institutional racism in Alaska, and it really plays out in our criminal justice system, where Indigenous people across our state are often required to live and work in urban areas without ever going back home again. That is one of the biggest problems I've seen. The other thing I want to introduce, of course, it's not generally talked about. It's called ethno-stress. And that's the notion that European culture has so inundated our communities and our lives and our livelihoods that many of us were overwhelmed by that intrusion, if you will, and just kind of checked out. And a lot of them that did check out, checked out right into the grave or into prison or on the streets.
Well, we are running out of time, and I just hate that because this is so fascinating. But the conference is going to be live streamed, and of course, you will have a whole day devoted to the boarding school experience. So in wrapping things up, Mita, can you give us your thoughts about how conferences like these can be truly healing experiences?
Well, I mean, coming together with people is healing. I would say post-pandemic, though, you know, we missed our Indigenous relatives and our even our non-Indigenous friends and family. But as an Alaska Native person, sharing food and laughing and being together and just spending time is an incredibly important part of our identity, our cultural identity, our internal identity. And so just the fact that we're coming together is going to be powerful. And then you layer on top of it the sharing the knowledge and sharing healing and sharing ways to be better human beings together. You know, that in itself is healing as well, because it's not just talking about it. It's actually doing it and modeling it at the same time. And that is going to impact our children and several generations past us coming together and learning how to interact, and also normalizing academia and Indigenous, you know, like that process. We have an immense body of knowledge. And as we have more people engaging and not afraid to go to school, because that's part of the problem, is there's been this fear of academia. And now that we're able to make these changes so it's a healthier environment, then more of our people will go and be able to contribute to this body of knowledge and help to advance our worldview and our health status as a community.
Well, Jocelyn, we've got just about a minute left. You want to wrap us up here and help us find out how we can go find out more?
We're starting Wednesday night And then every day starting at 8 or 8:15, you can find the program at sharingourknowledge.org and find out which sessions you want to view. But we have about 180 people registered, and we're expecting a great crowd in Wrangell, and we look forward to having a great crowd online as well. Everyone's welcome.
All right. Well, we have to go at this point, but thank you so much. I want to thank all of my guests for being here with us today, Jocelyn Estes, Jim LaBelle, Mita DeWitt, and Peter Metcalf, some of the organizers involved in putting on the Sharing Our Knowledge Conference, which will be live stream. Gunnish Cheesh for joining us. Everyone, have a great evening.
Support for Juno Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klingit and Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.